Welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome back to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. In our studio for a second session, we have Danielle Drevlo. She's a certified public accountant. She's married with two kids. They're heading into second and fourth grade this fall, and they live in Golden Valley. I had met her through a flyer, which audience members, flyers still work. You know, the main thing is hitting the pavement. So whether you do that door to door or go to lots of networking events, but it's really important when you're launching your business to get out there and pound the pavement, you know, get connected with lots of different groups and find your way and talk to people and really put yourself out there. And Danielle has really built her business from nothing up to 400 clients. And now your husband has joined. He quit as an engineer at General Mills to join you in your CPA practice. You've got some really shared values, it sounds like, of how you want to be in relationship with each other and how you want to raise your family. And that takes lots of different conversations. And it sounds like the kids are even helping.
Yes, I was going to say, we even had our kids out doing flyers this winter. But then I had a lot of people that told me they thought a lot of the younger generation doesn't know what it's like to work at something, you know, to see the results of your work. And so they were, we had a few comments on the flyers and having it be a family thing, mm-hmm. how the kids see. The kids would ask, you know, somebody would come over, is that a new client or an old client, Mommy?
I see. So you're training them in on entrepreneurship.
I would say yes.
Yeah. The nuts and bolts right from the start.
Yes.
And they're asking, what are your goals, Mom?
How many new clients do you want?
This year. Fundamental questions that every business owner needs to ask themselves. Off the air, we were talking with Mike Cabea, my sound technician. He had some burning questions regarding when a person starts up, limited liability company, limited partnerships, S corporations, sole proprietorships. Can you just briefly give us kind of a definition of what each of those are, what the pros or cons are? If you've got a sole proprietorship, when should you be making the decision maybe of changing your entity status if you need to at some point to protect your assets? Is there a ballpark figure for that? Or
yeah, that's a very good question. I would say, right, the easiest form out there is a sole proprietor, but that alone, there is no protection from your business separate from your family. And so the next step would be a limited liability company. One owner, tax-wise, it's treated the same as a sole proprietor, but they have now that shield around them as
so if you lose your equipment or something happens in the work that you're doing with the client and they sue you, they can't go after your personal assets, or do they need to sue the company first and then they could go after your personal assets?
As long as everything is in that LLC's name, then it would all be stay within the business and okay. not be able to affect your family. Then from there, you get into S corporations, C corporations. There are many forms of businesses. I would say maybe it's not what I tell my clients is maybe in the $30,000 to $40,000 net profit range is where they may want to look at changing their entity status
from an S corp to C corp,
from an LLC to possibly an S corporation.
Oh, really?
Okay. Because of taxation purposes.
Okay. So if a person has a sole proprietorship, naming the entity in their name gives them the right then to use their social security number, or can they come up with a different name without using their personal name, which is attached to the social security number?
They could register with the Secretary of State and get an assumed name.
Yes.
And pay for that name. And that would be the name that would be out there tied to their social security number.
And that is like $35, or I mean, it's something
there's
really
cheap. There's a nominal
cheap
charge.
That,
yes.
Yeah. So the Secretary of State's office, or SOS, .gov, Secretary of State.
I think it's a little bit longer than that, but I don't have that one memorized.
Yeah, okay, yeah, in Minnesota. Anyways, yeah, you can do a quick Google search. But that's where there's a ton of information.
Setting up any type of entity, limited liability, you know, nonprofit, a for-profit company.
And they have an annual book that they put together that now they can give you on CD or you can download, or they still send it out. But it gives you so much information about writing a business plan and just all the details about how to start the forms for all different types of entity, and gives you different categories, because all the information that a person gathers is referenced in some way through a number system. So, you know, for marketing purposes, knowing what industry you're in, or if you're working through social media on iTunes, like for a podcast, there are different categories that your business, your audience is embedded in, where there's a lot of information. And so it's good to know what category. The state has a list of all the different industries,
yeah,
and they're all indexed according to these different numbers. And so it's a good education to just see how the system of business ownership and collection of information is put together.
Mm-hmm. And I would say, going back to that, you know, your type of industry may also depict what type of entity classification you are. Meaning some people may just be treating it as a hobby. So it's just a sole proprietor.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it's a little bit more risky than something else. And so maybe you just want to treat it as an LLC just to keep that, again, that separation.
Sure. And the limited liability company, tell us more about that. There's also a limited liability partnership. And those are for opportunities for people to have partners, if you're an LLP, and to separate out the responsibilities between the partners. So like if one partner, it doesn't work out, let's say they, you know, aren't paying their bills or they stopped working to generate income, you're not stuck with all the liability of the company.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, there are multiple member LLCs as well.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is, you know,
the shareholders.
And the members.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, going back to the LLC, is again the most flexible, the easiest type of entity to set up. You know, it's one additional form on your individual taxes, a Schedule C. But if you get into an S corporation, you have to file a separate business tax form, separate payroll tax filings. And so there are some more reporting requirements. But you want to run the numbers. Again, I kind of look at over $30,000 to $40,000 of net profit. I would say you may want to look at how much payroll taxes you may be saving in an S corporation.
And for those who are wondering, what is net profit? It's you take all the revenue that you've generated.
Your gross revenue.
Yes, so all the money. And you take all the expenses and you subtract that out, and also you figure out the cost of goods.
Yes, your gross income, less your cost of goods sold, less your ordinary operating expenses.
Yeah, and cost of goods means what does it take to produce your service or your product? You know, how much does it cost you to do that? Or how much inventory are you storing?
Mm-hmm.
And
yep, any direct costs.
Depreciation of equipment. Yeah. So once you subtract out all those costs, then it's the net profit. And that's also the profit that you're taxed on.
Correct. That you're going to be paying income taxes on and paying payroll taxes on, which are Social Security and Medicare taxes.
if you're a limited liability company, limited liability partnership, or an S corporation?
S corporation is different.
Okay, so explain how it works with the S corporation that's different from the LLC.
So in an S corporation, you would be taking a wage, and so you would be getting a W-2 from your company. And so you, in a sense, get to decide how much you're going to pay payroll taxes on what wage. In an LLC, you're going to be paying payroll taxes on everything, but it must be a reasonable compensation according to the IRS.
Okay. All right. And what are some resources that you suggest for people to check out
when they're starting a business?
Mm-hmm.
I'd say on the IRS.gov website, you can obtain a federal tax ID number. The Secretary of State, Minnesota Secretary of State website is where you'll go to register your business with the state, pay a one-time fee, and then you have to register annually, telling the state you're still an active business. And then on...
And if you have a good accountant, they help you with letting you know when which is due.
Right. Start with the Secretary of State. That's the first place to start. You have to get registered there. And then you may or may not need a federal tax ID number. If you are an LLC single member and you don't have employees, you're not required to get a federal tax ID number.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Huh? But you need a state tax ID number.
You may not even need a state because you would just, if you are subject to sales tax, you would just use your Social Security number.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
But it doesn't hurt. If you get one, you know, you just make sure that you report that federal tax ID number on your Schedule C. And if you do get a federal tax ID number, the IRS will want to make sure you filed under that ID number.
Okay. And for filing with your company name, tell us more about that if you're a sole proprietorship. Or can we use yours?
What you have to do to keep that name active?
Yes.
So every year, you maybe file an assumed name. You pay to keep that name. Then every year you would say, yes, I still want to keep that name.
And you do that during the filing tax return time, right? Those are all things that you do at the time of filing taxes?
I do it after tax season. It's due before December 31st of that year. So that's something that I'll take care of in the off season.
I see.
For my clients.
Okay. Very good. And what kind of insurance do you suggest people have?
Well, I believe work comp is, you know, what would be needed if they have employees. Again, liability insurance, depending on the type of business that they are.
So if you're a service business, you go with a liability insurance?
Yes, a professional liability insurance.
And so based on your profession, there are certain fees that you pay for that.
A certain premium, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And do you have any resources for that?
I don't have any off the top of my head.
Okay. I can look that up and we can provide that for the listeners. So I'll put that in the narrative for all you listeners. All right. Next, what are the things that you run into with small business owners that you would like to say, you know, that would make your job easier?
I would say a lot of small business owners come in and they think, well, because I'm not that big company, one, I can get away with more things, or two, I can't. You kind of have the two extremes. But I tell somebody, whether or not you're a big company, you have to do the same things. You know, you have to keep track of your income, keep track of your expenses, and the big corporation has to do that as well. And so by getting started on the right foot of understanding that it is a big responsibility to have your own business and to keep track of it, you want to just have that thought in the back of your mind, mm-hmm. you know, from the beginning. And so by talking with your accountant or with some other, maybe a friend who's, you know, kind of gone along on the same path of what do I need to do from the beginning? You know, what kinds of things do I need to
keep track of,
keep track of and learn about? And what were your mistakes or, you know, I mean, talking to somebody about that. So, yeah.
And do you get any clients that come with a shoebox full of receipts?
I've had shoeboxes. I've had suitcases. You know, suitcases. Some people just, it's too overwhelming for them. You know, what do I do? You know, again, they didn't get started at the beginning of maybe talking with somebody of where do I start? How do I put these things together? And so 10 months later, now they're like, now what do I do?
Yeah. And then you've got the huge pile, and then it takes a lot longer.
Right.
So what is the best organization of your receipts, and like how do you do yours?
Well, I would say a lot of people, you know, if you keep monthly file folders or staple your receipts to your credit card statements, your business credit card statements. If you have one particular vendor that you work with all the time, maybe you have a file folder just for that vendor by year. You know, you have to kind of, it's not going to be an all or nothing, you know, one thing fits everybody. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you know, maybe keeping your years separate, keeping your checking account, your bank statements separate from your credit card statements. Separate from the things where, oops, I accidentally used my personal credit card instead of my business credit card. You'll want to keep those receipts separately as well to account for those.
And when we finish out a year, Matthew and I, both for my business and personally, we go back 7 years. Mm-hmm. And then in preparation for the next year, we take the 7 years out and that year, and we shred the paperwork from that year. Is that a good idea?
Yeah, I mean, 7 years, you want to keep up to 7 years of your tax documents. Sometimes you'll find on the IRS website, they'll say even keep your tax returns, you know, forever. But maybe the supporting documentation you can get rid of after 7 years. But definitely bank statements and receipts and things like that, after 7 years, you can shred that.
Okay. So just keep, after 7 years, you always want to keep your tax returns.
Maybe
more
keep your
than
business
7 years.
Tax returns.
Okay. And then, but the supporting documents are not what you need.
Correct.
But you would also suggest keeping your bank statements too?
No, those after
you
7 years, you can
too.
Get rid of those. Kind of your tax return is your final piece, your summary of the year. And sometimes if you've had some major things happen that year, buying a home, selling a home, you know, that stuff may be reflected in your tax return. And so that's why there's the thought of keeping just your tax return on file.
Sure. Do you still have a lot of sole proprietors who just have one bank account that they use for their personal finances and their business?
Yes. I mean, you know, realistically, that's going to happen. I have to kind of tell people as a suggestion to open up a separate business account. It makes it a lot easier come time to do your taxes when you're just looking at one account versus looking at three or four different accounts that you could have used and mixed business and personal. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, if you do have one separate account, it reduces questions if you were to ever get audited.
Okay. So I have that same recommendation too. Now, do you also recommend a business savings account? Now, Deb Pitzrick of Pitzrick & Associates, her and her husband, Jerry, we did some mentoring session with them, and Deb's a longtime friend of mine, and she used to do my bookkeeping, and she was notoriously detailed. And I love that because I knew that, you know, nothing would get missed with her. But I always, you know, sign all the checks and, you know, make sure I'm projecting out and doing those kinds of things. But one of the recommendations, and I couldn't implement this myself, but she could, for her and her husband's business, they would put all the income into their business savings account. And then once a month, or every other month, it depends upon, or I mean every other week, whatever their cash flow, they would take that money and write a check for the expenses that they have to cover all the expenses and put it in their checking account. So they always had money for their taxes and they were in there managing their money. It was a little extra step, but it helped them from making it really convoluted and difficult to manage your money and keep it, you know, without spending it all. So do you have any other tips? What do you think about that?
You know, I do. I mean, I know a lot of places, it kind of seems like it's a requirement to set up a business checking account and a savings account to reduce their monthly bank fees. You know, you're having those automatic transfers from your checking account to savings account. Most of my clients, from my experience, there's not money that's sitting in their savings account. You know, it's going right into their checking right away. Mm-hmm. And so the savings account isn't doing what it should.
Yeah.
And so is it a necessity? No. But if they're having problems saving up money for their taxes, then maybe it is a good idea to have a separate account. Or sometimes if you have automatic payments coming out of one account,
yes,
maybe you keep it out of that savings account so that, or the one account that has the least activity,
mm-hmm.
just so that, you know, there isn't by accident something else being taken out of that account.
Yes.
But it's not a recommendation that I make to my clients.
Okay. Okay, let's expand on this. So I grew up in the generation where we had hands-on, we wrote checks for everything, and we had our hands in the money, so it felt really real. Now we're in the age where, I mean, people barely carry cash with them. They have the debit card and the credit card. And I've seen a lot of business owners use credit card to float for cash flow when they couldn't get a credit line at the bank. And that works, but it's really frightening. Like, I even think about when you're managing a website and all of a sudden, all the little costs that all of a sudden, you know, you need backup and so cloud support, and you think, okay, well, that's free. But then all of a sudden you hit the max and now, you know, you've got to pay a monthly fee for that. But there are all these different fees that are kind of embedded that can get really out of control quickly. So do you have some methods for people to deal with the managing of the credit card debt and just managing the money and how they're making decisions regarding where they're spending their money?
Well, I could say I can think that go to a personal level as well, not just business. You know, I mean, obviously, if you know yourself well enough and you're, you know, out of hand, you know, charging stuff on the credit card and you continue to get, you know, another one and another one, and that's not how you're going to keep your business afloat. You know, at some point you have to, you know, kind of have a limit of, okay, mm-hmm. I need to really reassess this. Yeah. I think more so that goes to a personal, if you're not good with credit cards personally, then I wouldn't suggest using it for your business.
Yeah, that's a good...
I mean, right, you get a lot of people, they don't... I mean, reconciling a checkbook, I mean, who does that even these days? They just look at, you know, how much is in their checking account and, you know, do I have money in there? Can I buy it? Okay.
Yeah, right. And that doesn't lead to a lot of planning
looking
together.
Looking forward, no.
Yeah. I know couples who are in business together who have totally separate checking accounts, and they manage their own money separately. So they don't, and they divvy up who pays what bills, but it's from their separate credit cards and separate banking account. And I was like totally shocked by that.
That sounds like a lot more work to me
but it's also
keep things separate than to keep things together. But yes, I've got some clients that keep things separate as well.
Well, and yeah, it's also the decision making, like, and building trust with each other,
mm-hmm.
and maybe somebody is more of a spender,
giving them an allowance or something, you know, of what they can spend.
Right. So, well, we can have a whole another section. What I'd like to do is have you come for a session that you and I prepare a little bit more regarding handling money and kind of the emotional stresses that go along with managing money, but also how do you build trust so that you're investing in an emotional bank account that also is tied to the money. And maybe we can give tips to couples, but we can also talk about what is a framework for a business owner to really manage their money well? Like, what are some of the principles of managing their money? And I think that that would be really helpful to the learners. I mean, the listeners. Because I, you know, as we're talking about this, I mean, I'm just thinking about, like, my daughter just has a cell phone this year, finishing up eighth grade. And, you know, she doesn't see the money. She doesn't see the bank account. You know, there's no hands on.
Yeah. I mean, talking about it is, you know, talking about it with your kids and having them kind of toy with the idea of how much do you think this costs, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And making it physical. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like putting an envelope aside, like we do this for our vacation is we've got a jar. And when that gets full, we bring it to the bank, and then that we turn that into cash, and then we put that in an envelope, and that's what starts our vacation money.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, if somebody wants to watch a movie that costs extra, then they pull out the cash and they put it in the envelope. But we're trying to make it very, very concrete so she understands the concept of how money works. But we can get into a lot more details about that at another session. Would you like to come back at another time?
Yes, that sounds good.
Great. Well, thanks so much for being here. Are there any other thoughts that are coming to mind that you would like to share with the audience before we close out for today?
I think it's just exciting if anybody's, you know, thinking about starting their own business. I think you should just, you know, go for it. And I think it will be a success.
Great. 1 hour of planning saves 22 hours of fixing mistakes. I'll leave you with that little gem. See you next Monday. Thanks, Mike.